NBA. A lot of talk. You were just laughing at me because I was like.
No, I wasn't laughing at you. I was laughing at some of these decisions being made, but it happens.
Oh, you about the about Puma taking over the NBA? Is that Puma gear?
Yeah, Puma going to take over the NBA like Reebok is going to take over the NFL. How did that work out? No. Puma taking over the NBA? Have you ever seen a Puma basketball shoe before?
I have not. I'm saying, but this is how out of it I am when it comes to fashion, because, I mean, you know me, I don't really care about fashion all that much.
Oh, your fashion is smooth.
No, whatever.
Okay.
All right, but anyway, the last time I remember seeing anything like Puma not on Ricky Fowler was like all soccer type stuff. Did they make,
Has
Puma make like football jerseys and stuff like that? I haven't seen them recently.
Puma actually endorsed one of your favorite basketball players of all time. You wouldn't even.
Who's that?
That would be Vince Carter. In the 90s.
Oh, way back when. Okay.
Yeah.
But they're trying to make everything comeback. Everything comes around. No.
Listen, I hear that Puma is really, really huge in the Bahamas. You know? I heard it's huge in Jamaica. They have a guy by the name of Usain Bolt. Oh, that's right. He runs track. I've never seen a Puma basketball shoe before, but, you know, don't call it a comeback.
What if it's
here for years.
What if it's huge?
What, the shoe?
Yeah. What if it's like everything you could possibly hope it could be and more?
Certainly,
it's better than the big ballers, right?
I mean, listen, I can't wait for them new Pumas to drop. Because, I mean, I ain't seen old Pumas. But I can't wait for these new ones to drop. Look, I mean, you're young. Puma probably came at you, you know, said, listen, man, we want you to be our spokesman. We want you to be the face of
Puma.
And
they're on a couple of the draft picks, right?
Yeah, I think arguably the top, you know, two, you know, maybe the top three picks in the draft. Two of them decided to go with Puma.
The fashion sense can't be any worse than the shorts suit LeBron was repping during the finals, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You're talking about and who knows how much that suit costs with the shorts. But, no, I'm just saying, Puma, listen, what I've known Puma for is they have great, like, running shoes, like track shoes. Didn't know they made basketball shoes, but hey, I like you say, maybe the world is finna be going Puma crazy.
They got that sweet Detroit Lions logo on the side. It's awesome.
Whatever a Puma is. Is that what a Puma
Whatever
is?
Whatever like a Puma is?
I guess.
It's a cat.
A big cat, right? I mean, look, when I first saw it, I said, wait a minute, Puma? But maybe they know something we don't. Listen, if I'm 18, 19 years old, I'm coming out in the draft, whatever. Does somebody, Puma, come at me and say, hey.
Trying to be a trendsetter.
Exactly. Now, last time I checked, you got some big brands out there that's going to be hard to, you know, supersede.
Making a comeback.
I'm just saying, I mean, we'll see. I'm not going to put, because before I see them, because I remember, two finals ago when the Steph Currys came out, I said, no, they didn't come out here with these orthopedic. Up there, all white was that he had. I said, come on, man. Like, what are we doing? But Puma's had a lot of time to kind of see what's out there, weigh their options. They got to come with something nice.
That being said, I want to weigh this in. Because obviously, when it comes to the draft, obviously the MLB draft, it is what it is. Those kids aren't going to make it to the big show for a number of years. NFL draft, everybody is all about it. We love the NFL draft. People travel thousands of miles to go stand outside for the draft experience and boo the Jets pick.
Exactly.
That's what they do.
Exactly.
Exactly. But the NBA draft, do you feel the excitement for? I mean, obviously for the top couple of picks, it's huge in the lottery. But outside of that, it seems like there's not as much hype around the NBA draft as certainly you get with the NFL draft and what players could be coming in and making noise.
Yeah, the thing about the NBA draft is so much international talent, people that we don't know about. I mean, you got some of the big names that we saw in the NCAA tournament. But after, like, pick, and I know what the lottery goes to, pick 15? I think till pick 15 or something like that. After, like, pick 12, 10 or 12.
14, 13.
You start going, 14, what? It's too many. What? Who is that? What? That's the thing about the NBA draft. It's too many guys, I don't know, from the States that you like, who? Who did he play for? But, hey, man, look, I hope it's fun. I hope Puma does something, like, outrageous. I hope they just do something outrageous. They should. Because the NBA draft, I enjoy it, but it's just too many guys you don't know who they are. That's all it is. Like, who is this guy? You know,
I think part of that, too, is the one-year rule in college basketball is you don't, outside of the tournament, you don't get a chance to see a lot of guys nationally. Now, obviously, Dukes and the Carolinas and teams like that are on TV quite a bit, but even still, most people aren't paying attention to some of those early season games until you get to January and college football largely winds down. So I think a lot of it, like you said, even the college guys now, unless they were a junior or a senior who's been on a team in the tournament for a couple of years that's made a little noise, largely you may only know 7 to 8 guys in a draft, where NFL draft, you know hundreds of guys in the draft because you've seen them play college football Saturdays. It's just a weird dynamic with the NBA draft where you get up and go, oh, DeAndre Ayton, Luka Doncic. I mean, people be like losing their mind over Luka Doncic. I mean, I don't know how many regular sports fans have even seen film of Luka Doncic.
Yeah, but listen, I'm looking to see what guys like Grayson Allen is going to go. You know, but the thing is, you know about 5 or 6 guys. Now, if I'm sitting next to BJ and producer Jim, I mean, they might be losing their mind. They know everybody's name going to be called. Everybody. Pick number 6. Excuse me. Pick number 6, they know who it's going to be. So, we'll see. But you know what? I got to get my Pumas. I'm not worried about the draft. The Pumas is coming back. You know, I'm getting me some. I mean, you want me to get you?
Get me 2 pair.
What color, though? Because, I mean, you like solid colors. You don't want no different colors. All white, all black. That's it?
Yeah, no, apparently, you can't wear all white shoes. I get. I told that. Why you not? Can't do that.
What's wrong with your all white shoes? What's wrong with that?
Producer Jim is telling me you can't do that.
I was about to say, well, Producer Jim has, you know, Producer Jim has swag. Don't listen to BJ. I'm just saying, don't.
We'll come back. Final hour of the show. We'll go no huddle. We'll hear from D. Orlando Ledbetter. We'll talk about the Falcons. Where are they at with Julio Jones and the contract situation? Again, we saw Daryl quoted on another show earlier saying, a lot of bridge to mend between Julio Jones and the Atlanta Falcons, or the Atlanta Falcons and Julio Jones, depending on your side of the argument. So we'll talk about that with him coming up in about 30 minutes or so from right now. It's 3 and Out on the Southern Pigskin Radio Network. We're streaming live at ESPNCoastal.com and at Pigskin Radio on Twitter. Glad you're making us a part of your day. We'll hear from D. Orlando Ledbetter coming up in the final hour of the program. Also, Cassie Russell will join us coming up on the program. Ben, we did have a tweet during the break, so I'll bring it up before we hit up no huddle. Does Jay-Z getting involved with Puma make you change your mind about the Pumas and the gear? And again, I guess they're linked with DeAndre Ayton and a couple other Marvin Bagley, a couple of the top draft picks projected on Thursday night.
Absolutely. The fact that Jay-Z, who is one of the greatest, you know, lyricists of all time, is the director of basketball operations. What does he know about being a director? What does he know about director of basketball? Hey, man, that makes it a little different. Hopefully that might make the design a little bit better.
He knows how to promote. He knows how to promote.
I'm going to reintroduce myself. I am the director of basketball operations at Puma. Go ahead, Jay-Z. Get that money.
He's a little bit everywhere, isn't he?
Yes.
That's all right. Let's put it on the 20. Let's go. No huddle. Here on this Monday.
Buckle up and hold on tight. It's the No Huddle on 3 and Out. 3, 2, 1.
All right, would the Lakers' big three consisting of LeBron, Kawhi Leonard, and Paul George be good enough to have the Lake Show beat the Warriors?
Absolutely. I think when you look at three superstars, with two of them already having finals MVP or finals experience, and bringing on a guy like PG-13 who's, what, 6'8", 6'9", who's a two-way player, most definitely.
All right, we talked earlier about the Braves having interest in Manny Machado. Pick one. You can have Manny Machado or Bryce Harper. Who you selling out for?
Man, I'm getting Bryce Harper. What? Man, let me tell you something. While I know we ain't going to have a $10 to pay everybody else, I'm going to go with Bryce Harper. You got a chance to get one of the best players of baseball, you go get Manny Machado sales tickets.
Right up there, producer Jim was he is making a case for me in the break there. Who has the toughest non-conference schedule in college football this year?
I'm going to say, you know, the Clemson Tigers. We was talking about them a little bit earlier. When you look at the fact that they ain't running from nobody, I mean, the fact that they got to deal with that crazy conference, they're going to deal with Texas A&M out of conference, South Carolina out of conference, yep. That's going to be pretty rough.
All right, who has the easiest non-conference schedule?
That would be those young men in Athens, the Georgia Bulldogs. They get Austin Peay. Woo! They get Middle Tennessee State. Wow. They get Vanderbilt. And they get Tennessee.
Hey,
I'm sorry.
Vanderbilt is in the conference.
Well,
there.
I'm sorry. Well, yeah, I'm
Top
sorry.
Top of Channing.
Yeah, but Austin Peay, Middle Tennessee State, Murfreesboro, and Clarksville. Come on now.
And they also
and they get those. If you've ever been to Massachusetts, UMass. Wow.
Yep.
Wow. Marcus Camby knows, guys. Oh, that's basketball.
All right, Ben. Mike Foltynewicz's ERA is top 5 in Major League Baseball right now. Is he actually the Braves' ace of the future?
I don't know, man. Soroka and Newcomb is they pretty tough, but I think he's right up there. I mean, he's right up there, though.
It's a tough decision right now. I honestly thought you were going to say yes, and I would say, well, I couldn't even come up with a good argument to bait that. I mean, I think they have a good problem right now, yes, where you have two guys pitching really well, one, yes, guy who's made about, what, four starts,
mm-hmm,
Mike Soroka, but, man, does he look good. The Braves are sixth in ESPN's most recent MLB power rankings. Is that too high, too low, or are they right where they need to be?
I think because of the pitching, I think they're right where they need to be. I think when you look at the fact that the Braves, at first we was talking about, yeah, they playing well, but they ain't got no great pitching right now. But right now the pitching has gotten, you know, right there, I can even with those bats right now. So I'm going to say yes.
All right. Should Phil Mickelson have been disqualified from the U.S. Open for hitting the moving ball?
He probably should have, but I mean, how you gonna disqualify Phil? He probably should have.
That's the rule? Oh, well, okay. What? So, Phil, you can just do whatever you want.
He's
because
Phil.
You're Phil Mickelson. And,
okay, think about this. Me and you
sorry, finally, Charles Howell III. You're out of here.
Me and you finally made it to the big leagues. We get to be one of the guys at the U.S. Open, and they're going to send you and I. Hey, Kevin, go ahead and tell Phil he's disqualified. Me? I'm trying to keep my job. You can't get rid of Phil. Phil hit the ball while it was moving. He is a legend. So I'm just saying.
And scarred kids for life.
Oh, yeah. Thank God my children wasn't watching it, because I'm telling you, the game of golf is way too pure for that, Phil. Come on now. Kids are watching. Show us that.
Oh, man. It was funny to watch that. I watched it this weekend, and good job on a Monday, Ben. I watched it this weekend. I saw it, obviously, on Twitter, the replay. Everybody was melting down about Phil, and people were going, all these people are mad at Phil about putting the ball that's moving. Get a grip. Like, he's obviously frustrated. It wasn't good, but whatever. But then you see the video, and he hits it, and he's like, you can see that, oh, come on. And then he, like, picks up, and you said it was running. It kind of looked like trotting, jogging. And he goes over and then just slaps it back towards the hole.
Well, the thing about it is, if you're looking at social media, all you see is, are you serious? Are you kidding me? Really, Phil? I pay good money for my cable. I'm like, what did he do? I'm thinking, what did he do? And then when you see what he did, I'm like, what? Where are we in this world?
I know, you
like,
thought where, he, you would have thought he would have,
yeah,
thrown,
like,
a club
he,
at somebody.
Yeah, did he throw a club at somebody? Did he hit an onlooker? What happened? No, he just hit the ball while it was moving. It's golf. Guess what he made golf? He made it exciting. Apologies for Phil for making golf exciting for one time in my life. Hey, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I would do it.
You like seeing those guys struggle, though, this weekend.
Absolutely. I mean, I can't play golf a lick, but the fact that everybody looked bad, like nobody looked good, and the fact that we got social media melting down because, God forbid, you hit the ball while it's moving.
Well, that is against the rules.
Well, it is, but he's still.
I'm just saying. You're like,
I mean, it ain't the worst thing that could happen, though. I'm just saying, it ain't the worst thing that could happen. But think about this. You sitting there with your children, say, this is why I love golf. It's pure. Guys do the right thing. Constant profession. Oh, and here's my favorite golfer, Phil Mickelson. He hits the ball. You go, Phil, what are you doing? Phil, what are you doing? Oh, my.
No, Phil.
Phil, are you serious? You had one thing to do. But
that's the thing is that people say, oh, golfers call penalties on him. I mean, he's still got assessed a penalty. I want to bring producer Jim in here a second, because producer Jim is a big golf fan. He's especially a big fan of his cousin, Dustin, who's number one ranked in the world, as he likes to say. But, I mean, you're a golf guy. Do you have a problem with – You shake your head, but I mean, you play golf, you watch it a little bit. I mean, do you have a problem with Phil obviously blatantly breaking the rules? Like, I mean, this isn't one of those things where, like, nerd golf fan calls into the TV booth and is like, oh, did you see that he grounded his club 2 inches behind the ball and it oscillated in place?
Kevin called him a nerd golf fan.
No, you have those guys. No, there are nerd golf fans who will call the TV broadcast and be like, Phil.
Did you see it live, or did you see the highlights of him doing it?
I saw the highlight of it.
When you say it, did you go, Phil, come on, man, the purity. Come on, don't do that.
I mean, I thought it was funny more than
I thought
anything.
It was funny. Yeah, I thought it was.
I mean.
So we've all been there.
Here's the interpretation that I saw, though, that is a little bit different. Because, yeah, the rule that everyone's citing is it's a two-stroke penalty if you hit a moving ball. But the way that rule is made is for guys who are on a hill and the ball moves a little, then you hit it, and you're supposed to be assessed a penalty then. I don't think that this occurrence was in the spirit of the rule. And now Phil retroactively saying it was strategic, I don't think that's accurate either. I think it was the heat of the moment frustration thing. But still, it's not in the spirit of the rule. If you actually hit a moving ball on accident and you take your two-stroke penalty, that's one thing. I actually think that you could maybe enforce one of the other rules I saw where it's basically for an egregious I guess, overstepping of the etiquette of the game, you can be disqualified. So I think that's more.
Would you have run Phil from the U.S. Open?
I don't think I would have, but I do think that that is the argument. It's not whether or not he broke the rule. I mean, he was assessed the correct ruling for that penalty, but I think the argument is, was it so far over the line that it then was an infraction of the other rule where you
in
totally
the spirit of
broke
the, game,
the spirit of the game. You were totally out of line within the etiquette of the game, and that is where it may constitute a disqualification.
But you would not have been in favor of
it. I don't think so. I mean, and ultimately, when that much money's on the line, I'll hear the other argument, because even if it's not a ton to him, for some of the other guys who he may have been taking some money from, had it saved him some shots, sure. I think ultimately he didn't end up saving him any shots, but also that's partly because after he hit it by and then he runs and hits it back near the hole, he missed a putt. And so I think he probably would have ended up with a 10 regardless. But had he made that putt that lipped out and he ends up with a 9 instead of a 10, I mean, there's some serious money there. So, you know, there's a case on both sides. I'll hear it both ways, but at the end of the day, I think it was more funny than anything else.
Do you think because everybody, well, number one, do you think because of who he was and because everybody was playing bad? Like, everybody, do you think that's why he didn't get disqualified?
Yeah, I think that certainly played into it. Being Phil Mickelson, I don't know that someone else would have gotten that same treatment. And I also agree with you that the way the course was playing factored in and how much, stuff that the USGA was taking. If they didn't have so much on their plate, and even if it wasn't the U.S. Open, I mean, even if it was the U.S. Open, I'm saying, and even on that size of a stage, if everything prior to that had been running smoothly, they may have been in more of a position to enforce the rules a little bit stricter. But I think with all of the outcry about the, conditions of the course that they were having to stomach and kind of recant or fight back against, I don't know that they had the leeway they needed to disqualify a player of Phil's standing.
I liked it, though. I like seeing those guys struggle. The fact that nobody finished under par, great. I mean, I know they were all frustrated. Good. I mean, that's what the U.S. Open is supposed to be about. And frankly, I'd love to see a lot of the majors be difficult like that, because they're struggling at something that they're elite at. We obviously all could go out there and shoot 400 playing on that course. But I like seeing those guys have to work for it. I will say this. It did make the come down the stretch run on Sunday a little less dramatic, because you just quite frankly knew Dustin Johnson, there were no birdie opportunities, really. He was coming down the stretch a couple holes to play. You're going, he's just trying to save par, and you hope somebody falls apart and comes back to you. And Brooks Koepka, give him credit, he did not do that. And again, I don't want to change rules. I don't want to change setups. I hate when leagues and folks change rules to make the action more compelling, because the game itself should be compelling. And no matter what you do, you're always going to have good players, you're always going to have bad players, and you're never going to make it where every single game, every single outcome, you can't make it where every single major is going to be won on the 18th green with two dudes who had just, you know, birdied out, and you got to make that. I mean, it's just not going to happen where you get compelling down the stretch golf, much like you're not going to get World Series games that are 2-1 in the ninth inning every single time. It's just not going to happen. So I love seeing those guys struggle. Kudos to the USGA. Yes, Saturday was probably a little out of hand, but on the whole, the course played tough. It played challenging. And if you were going to sit there and complain about it the whole time, guess what? You were going to be 15 over and not in it. If you figured out a way to make shots the best you could, you were going to give yourself a chance to win. And again, give credit to Brooks Koepka back to back. I think, is he one of only like four guys ever to go back to back?
Yeah, I think so.
At the US Open. So he played unbelievable.
Well, and I think you hit it too, is it wasn't that this course was, like, totally out of hand. I mean, I know there was getting a lot of complaints, but people comparing it to Chambers Bay a couple of years ago, I think that was, like, borderline negligent, whereas this was, yeah, it was just playing tough. And, you know, Christian mentioned the greens earlier. I guess you could say that the guys who played earlier in the day had a pretty significant advantage as compared to guys who played in the afternoon when the greens were a lot harder, a lot faster. But I don't think that this was,
I mean, what are you supposed to do there? Turn on the sprinklers for 15 minutes in the middle of the round?
That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think this is bad in the way that it was out on the West Coast 2 years ago when they were playing out there. I mean, that was, like, truly terrible. This, I think, was just a difficult golf course. So I don't have a problem with it. And that's, I think, maybe part of the reason why, I think maybe that's somewhat the case against Phil, is that it's not like you were dealing with any extenuating circumstances that everyone else wasn't.
And the thing about it is, it lived up to the billing. Everybody was talking about how, you know, how narrow these links are, how hard this course is, and the fact that nobody, you know, finished over par. I mean, everybody under par. It's just the fact that, look, I think it's going to go down to history, one of the most compelling U.S. Opens of all time, and I think Phil Mickelson just added to that prestige because you're like, dude, forget what happened and who, you know, the fact that you had a, you know, a back-to-back winner. Phil Mickelson lost his mind for a second, for one quick second that he came back. So, I mean, it happens sometimes. Like, that's when you know that Phil's trying to have fun when he's doing things that he's never done. So, hey, I enjoyed it, though. I did enjoy it.